Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal. We meet here once a week, talk about food, farming, recipes, advice, and opinions. Iowa may be knee-deep in presidential candidates now, but at least we missed the monster snowstorm that dumped so much snow and misery on the east coast of the country. I hope all those folks are warm and well accounted for. However, snow, I suppose, is not so bad for everybody. I have a couple of friends in Kentucky who live on a small farm, and they got a good dump of snow, too, out of this last snowstorm, and they are involved in raising yaks. Yes, yaks. So think of the yaks down there. I think maybe the yaks feel right at home. So closer to home, things are snowy, things are cold. It is January. Keep an eye on your chicken house. My egg production has fallen off precipitously, and it is not just from the cold weather. I discovered a major breach of security just yesterday. We had a very large opossum in there helping himself to the eggs. So we had to extricate the opossum, and that is why the creator made opossums with tails. You can just get your big gloves in there and go in and kind of carry them out. The opossum was relocated at a far, far distance. And squirrels. Squirrels. It's a good year for squirrels, and they, too, have learned how to help themselves. They really don't have opposable thumbs, but they have found out how to take the top off of my bird feeder container. They do have learned how to help themselves. I was talking to my friend Valerie Stahlbaumer at the latest Central Iowa Barn Dance. Great dance this weekend with Roger Alexander calling and the Porch Stompers playing. And she told me that last week included National Pie Day and National Squirrel Day. Who knew? One more note about winter. I saw some robins the other day. Poor, poor little things. I saw one robin at my bird feeder, and I really even got out my bird book and thumbed through to see if anything else was robin-like. There's nothing else that's robin-like. And so this was a robin positively identified. It was positively identified as a cold robin. And then I was driving out toward my mailbox and saw a flock of about a dozen cold, cold birds. Today on the Donalana Kitchen, we're going to look forward to spring. Let's talk about farmer's market. That's a warmer thing than what we have right now. And also, my co-host and intrepid world traveler, Donna Prisgintis, sends us an audio postcard from New Zealand. With me in the kitchen today are two folks who are part of the Ames Main Street Farmers Market. We have Eugene Peterson and Tom Wilson. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Eugene, who are you and what's your involvement with Farmers Market?
I'm Eugene Peterson, and I work with the Chamber here in Ames, and I have managed the Farmers Market. I will be starting my fourth year this year, and I just really, really enjoy it.
Oh, great. And also we have Tom Wilson. Tom Wilson, who are you?
Yes, hi. Thanks for the invitation to come on. Tom Wilson and me and my girlfriend, Taylor Williams, we own and operate Remnant Hills Farm. We raise pasture-based livestock, pigs, chickens, and sheep, and also grow chemical-free vegetables and flowers. Last year was our first year vending at the market, and we look forward to many more. So I'll be giving a farmer's perspective on what it's like going in every day on Saturdays.
So what does it take to turn a downtown street into a pop-up market village once a week, every Saturday, from May to October? It just doesn't happen. There's a lot of considerations. Eugene, how does this all happen?
Well, we're already starting planning, working on all the activities and things we want to line up for the market, getting vendors signed up. On Saturday mornings, when it starts, we start like at 5 in the morning, and we set up our barricades, we mark our streets, we unload tents and chairs and everything, get everything ready for the vendors to arrive.
Things are waiting for us when we show up. This is a downtown public place. This is a common thoroughfare. How does one deal with cars? How do you make sure no cars are parked there?
Well, we put signs out on Friday night at 6 o'clock, and we let people know that they need not to park there between 5 a.m. and 1:30 p.m. on Saturday. Mm-hmm. And occasionally, we have to move a car, but basically, that's how we do it.
That's good. And when farmers and vendors show up, there's somebody with a clipboard. There is a method to the madness. Now, there is a set place for everyone.
Right. Right. We have them enter from the west, and everybody pulls in, and we have them assigned to a spot. They unload. They move their vehicles so other people can move in. And we just keep rotating everybody in.
Yeah, there's all kinds of farmers markets, but the farmers market that happens on Main Street, there are no, except for people that actually, like, have a food truck, there are no trucks and large things that people vend out of. That gives lots of room for people to walk.
Right, right. We like to leave space in between the tents so people can join or enjoy the downtown district also, and so we basically have them move their vehicles off the street, and we just have our tents set up.
There you go. Tom Wilson, you're a vendor, and last summer was a new vending experience for you. What's a Saturday morning like for you? How do you get ready for Farmers Market?
Definitely. We start very early as well. I know it's always different for each vendor depending on what their setup is. Some are lucky enough to be able to get set up, loaded up the evening before with fresh produce and frozen items. We need to wait till the very last minute before we head over from Nevada. So we try and have everything organized, ready to go. So that way the truck gets loaded up, coolers are loaded, put in, and then we head on over. For us, we do actually get a little bit earlier start getting out to feed and water animals on the farm before we get out there. So, like I said, some people do have a little bit easier or a little bit different. I know with our setup, though, we get a table out once we do arrive, and the coolers are easy to unload. So the vendors who may be doing more of the arts and crafts definitely have a lot more to organize and get out on their tables, get those prices set. So the food vendors, they have to get everything going, get the grills fired up. So I think for all vendors, it's gets better as the season goes on. I think there's maybe a little bit of rust in the beginning, and then you really kind of get the groove going through the year. And for any new vendors, I think for us, it was good to kind of have a practice run. See how long it takes you to load your vehicle, see how long it takes you to unload, have an idea on your table placement, what's going to go where, how you're going to load that up, and prices. And the more you can kind of have mentally prepared or walk through, I think the better off you are, because when you get there, you want to get the vehicle out of the way. So then you come back and you're trying to get it all going together, and, people come by, people want to talk. You may want to talk with other vendors, so you don't quite have as much time to do it, and then that bell rings. So a little bit of practice and preparation helps.
Yes, it does. The bell rings. The bell rings at 8 o'clock, and that means people do not sell before that. And what's the reason for that, Lu Jing?
Just to give everybody a chance to start at the same time. We do allow the vendors to maybe sell to each other a little before the market, but just so it's equal for everybody. And Roger Berger, one of our volunteers, is always there at 8 o'clock to ring that bell and start the market off.
And we depend on him, too.
Absolutely.
Yes, good. I'm a market vendor, too, down there. And I want to echo what Tom said about being ready. There are the things you end up throwing in your truck, or actually packing neatly in your truck. You have to remember things like bags and change and market and tablecloths. Just think, you learn. You learn as you go along. So, yes, you do. This concept of being fair, treating everybody the same, I'll talk about this as a village that actually happens, and there has to be some sort of rules and some sort of order to the thing. What is the role of the market master in this thing? There, you don't just line people up and ring the bell and go. There are some things that the market master sort of checks on every day and helps along. Can you speak to that, Lojean?
Well, we just make sure everybody's, we do have some rules and make sure that everybody's following the rules, has their product that they say they're going to have. Prices are marked so people can see it. There's food inspections that need to be, rules that need to be followed, and we kind of keep an eye on that, that everybody's got their eggs in a cooler and following the rules. Because the other vendors will notice, and we need to keep it fair for everybody that we're all following the rules.
Yes, because a farmer's market is really a group effort. You may think that you are just selling out of your spot, but there's a lot of communication that happens. Even though you may be way down the line from someone else, it's good to know that, oh, yes, down there they have sweet corn, or down there they have something else. Talking to customers is, I found that is really a good thing. When I first started vending at market, okay, all I'll do is set up and make my stuff look pretty and then just rake in the money. Well, yes, that's part of it, yes. But meeting people, and I realized that telling stories, listening to stories is very important. Do you want to talk about that, Tom?
Definitely. And that was the one thing that we look forward to build on in the future, and that's building those relationships with the people who want to come down to the market. People, you know, they might not always buy something, but they having those conversations, getting to share our story, let them know why we do what we do and how we can do that. You can tell the vendors who have been there for years that they do have that following, or they do have those customers. And that's something that we look forward to having as well, because you never know what it might lead to. Maybe during the off season, it leads to purchases of products, or maybe relationships built with restaurants or other opportunities for whatever type of vendor they may be. So getting to have that communication and taking the time to have conversations. Like Lojean mentioned, there's a lot of space, and it's not just for the vendors to the customers. It's nice to see the people attending the market, seeing friends or meeting other people, and there's always a lot of conversations and enough room for people to stop and say hi and not feel like they're crunched for space or that they can't, you know, spend a little time talking with the vendor. So I do enjoy that. And like I said, or you were touching base, the organization that the market master and their crew does, you know, when we show up, if there's questions that we have, we know that if we just find somebody in a purple shirt that we'll be set, that they'll be able to take care of us. And they do a lot of hard work getting everything ready to go and then taken down. So,
yes, the farmers market has gone through many iterations here in Ames. Currently, the Chamber of Commerce has been involved. Speaking of communication, Farmers Market, in a sense, kind of moves into downtown Ames once a week. How do you get the local merchants on board? How do you convince a store downtown that, well, for these hours in front, these hours on Saturday morning, we're not going to let people park in front of your store? That could possibly be a hard sell. Or how do you communicate with those people?
Well, it is an issue. Parking downtown is an issue, and we just try to bring up all the positive issues, like bringing close to 3,000 people down every week at the market. You know, that's a very positive thing. A lot of people, I have heard them myself say, oh, I didn't know that store was down there, you know. And I know I've talked to some of the merchants, and they do see expanded business. It's not always on Saturday, but they know the people see and they stop by and they come back another day and say, oh, I was here and I saw your store. I saw this in the window or something. And so we just kind of stick to the positive. And a lot of the people really do love it. The atmosphere is so fun. You know, the music and things. They come out and they enjoy the food and they do their purchases also. So
that's right. I guess we all have to eat.
Yep.
So good. Ames has sort of taken Farmers Market on with pride these past couple years, and that's a positive thing, a positive thing, yes. I've been kind of thinking about how Farmers Market started, and people have asked me, and I've been involved with Farmers Market kind of off and on here in Ames since the late 90s. I think I started about 98 or 97. It's been in many different locations under many different guises, and Ursula Rudenberg, the station manager here, passed me this piece of paper, and she found it among her mother's things. And her mother was Veronica Rudenberg. She was a longtime Ames resident, and she was involved in the start of the very first farmers market. And as far as I can gather from this, she gave us a little speech here, as far as I can gather from this, the Ames Farmers Market officially started in 1974, for better or worse, up and down, a lot of different places. And this is a few words from a speech that she gave to open the 1997 Farmers Market. There was a ribbon cutting and everything. She showed up dressed in her traditional costume from the Swiss city of Zurich. And she did that because she said, I remember farmers markets there, and it was a good time. And here is what Veronica Rudenberg said in 1997 at the ribbon cutting to the opening of the farmers market, at that time at Ames North Grand Mall. Here she goes. She says, I want to thank the current leadership of the farmers market for warmly welcoming me to today's ceremony. Together with Martha Benson, Lisa Foud, and six others, we went to the Ames City Council 23 years ago because we all thought it would be a wonderful thing to be able to buy homegrown produce on a true, real, live, open market directly from growers in our own community. That's what I remember doing as a young girl with my mother, who, in addition to being a minister's wife, was also a professional gardener. My efforts to create here a similar market to which she, too, would have enjoyed going were a way of thanking her for her guidance regarding wholesome food. I'm very happy the farmers market is alive and well and in good hands, and that it contributes to our community. So that's a little bit of a audio there from Farmers Market Past. So we've heard a little bit about Farmers Market setting up in the morning time. How many vendors did you say we had this year?
88.
88. That's pretty
wonderful.
Darn good. Mm-hmm. That's pretty darn good. And as I remember, sometimes the Farmers Market in the past was just like half of a block, or sometimes it was just a few stalls in a parking lot. How much space does the farmers market take up now?
Well, as of 3 years ago, we expanded to two blocks, the 300 and 400 block of Main Street. So that's awesome.
It is an awesome market. It is. Mm-hmm. You are listening to KHOI 89.1 Community Radio. Local, tasty radio for the heart of Iowa. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. Welcome back. That was some nice, easygoing banjo music from Iowa banjo player Bob Black. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We are talking to Lojean Peterson, market master for the Ames Main Street Farmers Market, and Tom Wilson, farmer and vendor. He has Remnant Hills Farm, and he's a vendor at the farmers market. We're talking about what it's like to put together such an event. Farmers markets have grown all over the place. People are finding that it is good for not just their own tummies to put good local food in it, but helps local economy. And it's a fine, fine, fine community builder, too, to have farmers markets pop up at least once a week in your town. Does many good things for the town. And it just doesn't all have to do with food. It has to do with meeting your neighbors, meeting your farmer, meeting someone and sharing something from a food vendor. So, Lojean, how is it going? How is this farmers market experience in downtown Ames going?
It's going wonderful. Like you said, some of the history of the market, I think in 2011 when it started down here on Main Street, we started with 23 vendors. And last year, we were up to 88 vendors. And a lot of those are occasional vendors that may just join us for six times out of the year or 8, 10. But they add that spice and that variety to keep the market fresh and interesting. And we believe in that local feel, too. We pride ourselves on having local farmers, local craftsmen, artisans join us. Everything needs to be handmade, hand-grown.
So there is a policy from this to this farmers market. And how do you define local?
Local is at least in Iowa.
Okay.
And we try to keep it in the surrounding, but Iowa for sure is local. And everything has to be hand-grown or homegrown, I should say. You grow it. You cannot broker it from another source like a grocery store or wholesale item. And the artisans all have to make their own product that they bring to the market.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that adds, we build that community, like you say. We support the local people, and our visitors get to know the farmers and where their product's grown, how it's grown. And Tom mentioned, and you mentioned about the visiting that you do with I think walking up and down as a market master here, you know, you hear you guys visiting with people, and I think that's so important that people learn about it. And everybody at the market is so knowledgeable. And, you know, how do you fix this? How do you grow this? Oh, I've never heard of this. And you explain it to them. And I think that's just a really nice feature of the market.
It is. It is. In other words, you won't find somebody at this farmer's market getting a really good deal on a whole big crate of bananas and then coming down. No. I think you can pretty much tell. And it builds trust, the kind of trust that a customer has with a farmer. Tom, you sell meat at one of the things that you sell off of your farm, and that's a real trust-involved sort of purchase. How do you convince people to try your things for the first time, and do they come back?
Definitely. There's a whole lot of different aspects to that, and mentioned earlier, you know, there's a good organization and rules and regulations put together, so we know that, you know, what we're doing is safe to eat. So, of course, all meat processed through a USDA inspected facility. You want to keep the eggs cool and things like that. So But I think a lot of it comes back to that one-on-one conversation with the customer, is the education side. If it is something that they've never tried before, you can explain, this is, you know, how we may cook it at home. This is how we usually prepare this. And then they can go from there and maybe they'll try it. Maybe they want to stick to their comfort zone and they might just get the items that they're familiar with. But I feel as the year went on, and not to say that we have a lot of different products with meat, you know, pork. We have a lot of pork chops and brats and bacon and things like that. But there are some different items that maybe somebody doesn't have that frequently. So once they might have a couple of their comfort zone or normal items, or maybe on the vegetable side, it's, you know, getting their cucumbers and tomatoes before they decide they want to try kohlrabi. So, you know, there's that relationship that's built with the farmer and the customer can help and lead to that. So somebody does know that If the vendor says that, you know, you should try this, it's going to be good, that they can take their word for it, and when they go home, they're not disappointed. So I think that's been pretty key to the relationships that we have built. And with the market, it has helped. So we also vend out of an online co-op here in town, Farm to Folk. So we do offer products through there. And then, you know, working with the customers at the market, for us, having meat and eggs, it's year-round. So just because the market's over at the end of October doesn't mean that we don't have product that we still need to sell and that we want to get out there. So we were able to build up a nice list and a nice base of customers that we've continued with our buying group that we set up through the winter. And we do a drop-off every couple weeks here in town. So if you're interested, you can always go to remnanthillsfarm.com to take a look at how that works. But that type of relationship and kind of just keeps expanding. And so we look forward to having the same customers next year as well as new ones. We hope that we will maybe be able to work with Logene to stay at the same spot, because I think that's pretty important too, that the vendors know, or they can, you know, we're in that same spot every week. And so that customer who might be there just occasionally, they know where they can come back and find us. So
that is important. That's a really good service that the farmers market can do. There's an order to the chaos then, yes. And I can speak to the fact that demand for items grow. Years ago when I was first starting farmers market and I first started bringing eggs to farmers market, farmers have to kind of look around, and farmers and all the vendors have to charge what they have to charge. If you have organic free-range eggs, for goodness sakes, those chickens earn their money. So what we charge at farmers market generally really means it costs that much to bring these things to you of a Saturday morning. And that's another good reason to keep talking to people. Let them know what it takes to bring good food to your market every weekend. So some of the other vendors, there's all kinds of good stuff that happens at farmers market, and I would like to go because I can usually get something already made. That's kind of a new development at farmers market, having someone there with a coffee pot on, with some really good baked goods. And Tom, you were talking about preparing the day before, the morning before, to load things up. All those bakers and food vendors, they have to prepare a lot. And three cheers for all of them. I do like to kind of taste everything. And you talked about occasional vendors, Logene. There was she wasn't there all the time, but there was a woman that sold aprons and crullers. Crullers. I didn't know what a cruller was. A cruller is sort of like a donut, right?
Yes, a fancy pastry. It was awesome.
Yes. What a nice thing to get of a farmer's market in the morning time there. That was very, very good. So there's an economic impact, Logene, for the farmers. I've heard of some farmers markets in this country where farmers even kind of keep track and they all kind of figure out how much money they make out of farmers market. And we don't do that officially, but the economic impact that it has on this community is pretty good, because things are purchased locally and all that recycles into itself.
Right. It just circles around.
Yeah. Could you mention some of the other food vendors and some of the other vendors besides just fruits and vegetables here? I don't know. I was just going to read some of these people. You probably, some of you people out there in the listening land have probably visited some of these folks. The cut flowers, that's a nice thing. There was Friends Cut Flowers and
Elizabella Flower
and Elizabella's Flowers. Honey, yes.
Honey, we have, Remnant Hills had cut flowers also, but we had two or three different honey vendors. Elizabella Flower Farm, I know, had honey, and Walnut Creek has honey. J&P Gardens had honey. But we have just a variety of vegetables. I was always amazed. You can always find something new that you hadn't seen before.
And I can always learn how to grow this stuff.
Right.
Because these people, we all together, we know more than we do separately. Yes, we do. Berry Patch Farm is usually there, and everybody is always scrabbling for the first berries in the spring. So three cheers to Berry Patch for being a fine supporter of Ames Farmers Market. There's a place called Cloverdale Quarter Acre, Corey Farms. Oh, let's see. Mm-hmm. Heritage Hill Farm, Iowa Fresh Produce. Iowa Fresh Produce, that's Bruce Smith, and he can talk your leg off. Yes,
right.
He can, and he has lots of good things to do. Lots of good things. Lee's Greens, Maxwell Farm. Maxwell Farms Vegetables is good.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And there's, I've always been rather fond of Suzette Sewing. Now, who would think that a seamstress would come and set up on Main Street? And she does.
She's there at 6 o'clock every morning setting up her sewing. And they're just wonderful products.
I've bought a lot of presents that way.
Mm-hmm.
Who can't use an extra pot holder? Yes, we
absolutely
can. Yes, we can. Good. And also, the Corey Family Farm. They've been there for a long time. They do beef, lamb, goat meats, eggs, vegetables, beef sticks. They're always there with their bright smiling faces. And food. The Thai restaurants downtown. And
Strudel House that brings wonderful pastries every morning.
Yes. India Delights. They've been there a long time. Like clockwork, and they're
mm-hmm.
there. They are there. And speaking of being there like clockwork, sometimes Farmers Market is a beautiful place to be. This is Iowa. Occasionally, it's a very challenging place to be. What happens when it rains?
Good question. It depends. Is it just rain? Is it a thunderstorm?
Mm-hmm.
We've never canceled except for one snow day before
day.
I started. But rain, if it's lightning, we just kind of watch the weather. We go sit in the chamber or we sit in our vehicles and kind of ride it out. But we've never had to cancel because of rain.
That's one of the times when we do appreciate the downtown merchants, because we can all kind of back up into their doorway or go inside. A rainstorm blowing west to east down Main Street is a real, it's almost worth experiencing once or twice, just so you sort of realize how
a factor downtown, down those streets. And that's why all the vendors need to bring weights. And, you know,
that's another
thing that people don't think about. They have to weight their tents down. Because
another thing to pack in your truck.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I have seen umbrellas and tents go bouncing
flying,
down.
Yeah. Even with weights.
A fine addition that has come to the Ames Farmers Market the past few years has been not just the tents and things set up for the vendors, but you as market master have set up little cafe chairs and umbrellas down the middle of the market. That's been a real success, I think.
Yeah, I think so. It was an idea I had, and it was just a lot of fun to let people sit and enjoy the market. You know, we have two musicians every week to sit and enjoy. And like you say, we have a lot of people who come down just to have coffee and visit and meet friends. We have children's events that they get to, you know, have fun at. And so it gives them a place to sit and maybe think about something they saw and maybe want to get up and go purchase something else also, you know. So I think it works out for everybody.
Yes, it does. So, Tom, is the farmer's market a good investment, a good investment of your time? Is that a good thing for you?
We definitely feel that it is, and that's why we do look forward to being there again in the future this next year as well. The atmosphere is, you know, you can't complain about it at all. Like you said, you have the music on both ends, so you can, you know, depending on where you're at, you get to listen to some nice musicians here in town, the food vendors, just the whole atmosphere. Everybody always looks like they're having fun, and you hear people laughing and talking, and so it's nice. For us, it, you know, it's a great promotional opportunity. Not only do we get the sales on the Saturday, but we also are using that as a marketing opportunity to promote what we are doing and how we are doing it, to hopefully be able to build our business, which is our farm. So I think the, you know, the face-to-face contacts, the different people that you meet, it's not just, you know, tied down to farms. It's for the artisans as well, people who are doing crafts, and if they're doing food. I mean, you're hoping, you know, if you're one of the food vendors, that they have something there and they want to come back to your restaurant, or they're going to come back the following week. So it's good to be able to have the chance to spread your story and to build with that.
That's great. That's great. You are listening to KHOI. Support this fine station. This is community radio station. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. Back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. Donna Prisgintis has been spending the winter in New Zealand. Good move, huh? Yeah. She's warm. We are not. She called me last weekend, and she plans on heading back to Iowa in early February to jump in live on this program. The first thing that Donna said to me on the phone is, "What in the world is going on back there in central Iowa? Everybody in New Zealand is asking her to explain Donald Trump." So she's got her work cut out for her down there. I had to tell her, "Yes, it's what? Yes, it is." And it, yeah, okay. She sent me an interview with her local butcher. She's spending time with her family in a town called Tawanda on the coast of northeast New Zealand on the Bay of Plenty. She talked with a butcher and meat inspector named Doug Jarvis.
Doug Jarvis is also going to talk about the hormones used in the animals here and what the situation is.
Well, in New Zealand and the UK and Europe, hormones are frowned upon. Because I always remember when I was at university.
They're called growth promoters in
growth
the
promoters,
US.
Yes, yeah.
Yes.
I always remember when I was at university, we were doing a study, and in Germany there was growth promoters added to chicken feed. These chickens were destined for an all boys school in Germany. And it was only just all boys. And after about six to 8 months, these boys started growing breasts. And it was
that's a direct correlation. There
was, and they traced it back to the chicken, which was. And what happened was they had an apprentice feeder, and they, instead of putting 2 scoops of growth promoters in the feed, he put 200.
Oh my god!
So this is why this is.
So it's why it was so obvious.
This is, yes, this is why they started to grow breasts very quickly. So after that issue. The government stepped in and said, look, this is, you know...
The English government or the German
Well, the German one at the first.
Yes.
So they stepped in and stopped any growth hormones being added to feed. Then the rest of Europe followed, England as well. The meat inspectors, which at the time I was a meat inspector, and I travelled throughout the UK doing animal inspection, and we used to take samples of kidneys, liver... urine, spleen. So all your filter organs were tested for any growth hormones, plus other things as well.
And this was part of an English inspection system.
It was. Fantastic. Because you could not give antibiotics prior to the animal being slaughtered, so they had to be off antibiotic, or if they were sick, they sent to the sick. So... They also tested for antibiotics.
So they were testing for antibiotics, growth hormones, what else?
Anything what's abnormal. Any abnormalities. Mm-hmm. And you could trace it back to the farm because each animal had a passport. So that's where the passport...
Well, they've been trying to do this, but of course, you know, in the US, just in this past month, they repealed the country of origin labeling system, which... It was a World Trade Organization appeal from Canada saying, oh, no, we don't want consumers to know where the meat came from.
Yeah, there's a lot of that goes on. They hide a lot of things from the customer, which is, that's why I do what I do here.
So you only do New Zealand animals?
Yes.
Yeah.
Great. And are they pretty much local to your area?
I would say so, because the travelling distances aren't... massive here, where like there in the US,
mm-hmm.
where I do know, I've done studies, slaughterhouses in the US, they come off trains. So these cattle are put onto trains,
mm-hmm.
and they into the slaughter, and they walk off the train into the slaughter. Now, even when I was 12 years old with my father, if any came off the wagon, and which he said they looked drunk, which they weren't drunk, they'd been fed something they shouldn't have been fed. Even barley, they feed them on barley. Now, the barley ferments in cattle's, because they have 4 stomachs. It ferments, and it makes them drunk.
Yeah.
Because it's like an alcoholic drink. So he could tell straight away. But we used to rest the animals for 48 hours before we slaughtered them.
Oh, for 40. They do
for
do it at least overnight on most places, because they're finding, of course... A stressed animal is not going to taste very good.
No, and that's in New Zealand as well.
Mm-hmm.
They some of the animals are straight off the truck, straight into slaughter because of time constraints.
That's good.
And that's my gripe of New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
They don't rest the animals enough.
Do you have any control over that, about where your cattle are killed?
What you purchase?
Oh, well, if I'm not happy with what I get, sometimes I can go and pick my own.
Mm.
That's if I'm allowed. But generally, I don't have any control of what I get. But if I don't get... They know.
Okay. Yeah,
if I'm not happy with it, it's on its way back. Yeah.
My son owns actually a mid-sized meat processing plant in Vermont. So, you know, I've learned a lot from him about this sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah. You do have to rest that animal.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And feed and water it.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That was my job when I was a young boy. I had to feed and water the cattle in the lurage. We called it a lurage. I don't know what you...
Lurage?
Yeah. A-G-E.
And so that's like the holding pen
for 48 hours, yeah.
48 hours. That's good. They get used to it then, and they're calm down.
They wrap in and they sleep and eat and drink. And
uh-huh.
They're not just...
The blood sugar levels is right down.
Yeah.
So that's...
It's logical, isn't it?
And what's the method of... sort of execution here? Do they use stun guns?
Stun guns, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's as they do in Europe.
Uh-huh.
Every country has to stun an animal first.
Yeah. Pretty fast.
Even the halal is stunned first.
Oh, yeah.
In the UK, I have worked in a halal processing plant, and they stun the animal after, which is very quick.
Slit and stun?
Yeah.
Is that what they do?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Well, that's probably enough for my audience.
Me too.
So thank you very, very much, Doug. And now let's have at buying some good meat. Thank you, Doug.
Thank you.
That was a report from Donna, talking with a butcher in New Zealand. Speaking of meat, I want to do a shout-out here to Story City Locker, a fine place in Story City, who provided a real fine selection of meat for the Practical Farmers Annual Conference. There was quite a gathering here in Ames last weekend. I heard that the total amount of people gathered at that event were 960. 960 farmers and people that care about food. And it was also the site of maybe Central Iowa's largest potluck. Boy, that was pretty darn good. I'm here in the kitchen with Tom Wilson and Lojean Peterson. We're talking about local food here and farmers markets. Lojean, besides selling things, you're involved in organizing a lot of special events for the market. Can you tell me about some of those?
Yes. We kind of like to make the farmers market not only for vegetables and produce and crafts, but a destination place for families and all ages of people to come down. So we provide different things like the petting zoo, inflatables, pony rides, face painting for the children during the season. And then we also have cooking contests, which are a lot of fun. The salsa contest, then we have a chili cook-off contest, and our bacon sweet and savory, which is have become a lot of fun and get a lot of participants from all over.
It's not just the vendors that do this.
No.
All kinds of just regular folk. And as I recall, there are samples. Yes, there
yes.
are samples.
Yes, part of the, we have a judges contest, and then we have our contest that we run that the visitors get to vote for their favorite. So they line up and taste the samples and then vote for their favorite during all these. And that's one of our popular things.
It has been. Now, who would think that somebody would make something and then take it down there? And it's kind of like a mini state fair.
Yes.
Yeah. And yes, you have trophies.
Yes, we have trophies and cash prizes. And we have people from the surrounding communities, even Des Moines, come join us for those. So,
a fine thing to do. It really adds another fun thing to do here. One of the winners of one of the past contests was actually she's an occasional vendor, right?
Right.
Jennifer Knox from a booth there called Salt Liquors. Tell me what Salt Liquors is.
They have their own blend of spices and sea salt.
Oh, they do. And I didn't know anything about this sort of thing, flavored salt. So mm-hmm. Now I'm a fan. And she sent me a notice here from, she's Jennifer Knox, the chief salt licker. She said, I want to let you know about a chili making class I will be teaching on Wednesday, February 3rd, 5:30 p.m. at the Des Moines Social Club. Hint, hint, just in time for the Super Bowl. That's in Des Moines at 900 Mulberry Street. And she'll be using all kinds of good advice and some of her salt and herb blends. The thing that she'll be featuring is a salt blend called Ames Chili Champ, because I know she was absolutely thrilled to be the winner of the Ames Downtown Ames Market Chili Contest. And to see things lead on and on to better things. Good. Great. So, is there contact information, Lojean, for anybody who would be interested in more information about the Ames Farmers Market?
Absolutely. You can go to our website, www.amesmainstreetfarmersmarket.com, and go to the About section. There's a place that says Become a Vendor, and that will have all our rules and regulations. You can also stop down at the Ames Chamber of Commerce office, and they will have things at the front desk that you can pick up. And you can always follow our Facebook posts, which is our crowd is really growing, our followers, which is so exciting to see. And we always post information on there that you can find to let you know about our stuff.
Great. So if you're thinking of being a vendor or you want to know more information, go to those fine sites and come to the market this coming summer. Go to a market any place, all over central Iowa. There's probably one in your town. Get to know your farmer. Thank you for being with us today, Tom and Lojean.
Thank you for having us.
Great. So I told you about the Salt Liquors Chili event. Oh, for more information on that, you can go to saltliquors.com. That's their website, and there'll be more stuff on there. Okay? Also, things I want to tell you about. There's a Meet the Producers CSA event at Wheatsfield Co-op here in Ames, Saturday, January 30th, 1 to 4. At the Ames Public Library, now this sounds good, there is a Cooking Up a Storm cookbook sale on Friday and Saturday, this coming Friday and Saturday. And go ahead, be a good citizen. Think of going to the Iowa caucuses on February 1st. That's next Tuesday. Make use of this opportunity to stand up and be counted. If you don't vote, you have no reason to complain. Go ahead. Be a good citizen. You've been listening to the Donalana Kitchen with special guests Lojean Peterson and Tom Wilson. We've been talking about farmers market, trying to warm up our thoughts here, get away from the cold winter, and think about the good season to come up. You've been listening to music by Bob Black, a fine banjo player from eastern Iowa, from his CD, Banjoy. Listen to the Donalana Kitchen Tuesday at noon, on air, stream, or podcast. This is Community Radio. Support this fine station. We're all in this together. My name's Lana Noctigal. We've had fine engineering by Rick Morrison. Eat good food, enjoy life.